So this is kind of a ghost of cotton pest future talk, and this is all work that's funded by the Farm Bill to do some early detection of potential introduction of Armidra into the United States. And so, to begin with, a brief background on Helicoverpa armidra. It's a severe economic pest, and it feeds on the fruiting structures just like Zea. However, it has a much larger host range. It feeds on over 200 different plants and 45 different families, including multiple different crops. It's considered a severe economic pest in most parts of the world. And to kind of underline that point, it is the target of over like 50% of all insecticides in India and China. And so, it's established all over the old world. However, what's more pertinent to continental United States is it's been established in Brazil. So it was detected, I think, first in 2013. It subsequently moved all over Brazil and into other countries surrounding Brazil, like Argentina. And perhaps more importantly, it has been found in Puerto Rico, to be established in Puerto Rico. It was first identified, I think, in 2014. And so potential invasion routes into the United States. In some ways, it's kind of surprising that it hasn't already established in the U.S. because there's been over 1,000 interceptions, border interceptions, in the last 15 plus years. But a likely way that it will potentially come to the U.S. is through dispersal. So potentially it'll move up through South America into Mexico, then ultimately up into Texas and the rest of the United States. But more likely, you'll find it island hopping from Puerto Rico into Florida. And in 2015, there were a few male moths that were identified as Armidra that were intercepted or trapped them in Florida. Subsequent to that, there have been no documented identifications of Armidra in the continental United States. So, Zea and Armidra are very closely related, and in fact, they are nearly morphologically indistinguishable. They're both attracted to the same pheromones, and at the traps you'll have the male moths, and the males can only be identified by a kind of laborious microscopic dissection to look at the genitalia. Females and caterpillars are morphologically the same, or indistinguishable, and can only be identified using DNA. Similar to hybrids. So these two species are readily hybridizing in Brazil. And so here you kind of get, you're starting to look for not invasive species, but potentially invasive genomes. So you're looking for genes of Armidra that might move into a Zea moth. So you might get a moth that is ostensibly Zea. However, it has maybe an expanded host range because it has some of these Armidra genes in it. And so we are developing a high throughput sequencing protocol that can look at multiple genes at the same time. And so high throughput sequencing can sequence multiple genes from multiple species at the same time, and it can produce millions of reads. So you can detect even dilute amounts of Armidra DNA in a big pool of Zea DNA. So the two methods I'm going to talk about, the first one is using MiSeq. And so MiSeq. So for most of these Illumina-based techniques, you need to use like kind of small amplicons or small reads. And so this, we use like a paired end, 300 base paired. And then that gives us about a 550 nucleotide read. And one lane of this sequencer, you can get about 40 million reads, and I think that'll give us like 5,000 to 10,000 moths per lane at a cost of around like $5,000. So you can put a lot of moths on the system and identify them to Zea or Armidra. It's a fairly long process. It can take a couple weeks. However, it does have a very low error rate, and I only point that out because the second test that we use is the Oxford Nanopore MinION. And the nice thing about this is it's portable. It's small, handheld. You can hook it up to a laptop and do sequencing right in the lab. Rapid results, so you can do everything in like one day. You can do everything starting with the DNA extraction to the PCR to the library prep to the sequencing and the bioinformatics all within 24 hours. You get long reads, the longest read so far they have. I think they might have gotten a longer one, but they're shooting for like 1 million nucleotides. But as of now, they have an 800,000 nucleotide contiguous strand of DNA that has been sequenced on one of these. It does, though, the trade-off is it has a high error rate, 10 to 15%, and so that is a problem, especially when you're looking for like a SNP or like a single nucleotide variation that is descriptive of, that can identify one of these species. So the samples that we ran on this, so the first that we did were these serial dilutions, and we did these kind of to get an idea of the threshold, the upper limit of detection for the MiSeq. And we began with starting a, so Zaya-only negative control. And these were pooled DNA from Zaya individuals that were collected around the United States. So we get many different populations and potentially many different, like, haplotypes. A subset of that pooled DNA we spiked with Armidra. And we did this for, I think, 6 replicates. And we spiked it with Armidra from either 3 to 5 populations collected around the world to get kind of more haplotypes, including populations that were collected in Brazil. And the serial dilutions here are 1 in 10, all the way up to 1 in 10,000. So very trace amounts of Armidra. And then this is, we did legs as well. And legs are probably how this is going to work in practice, where you'll go to a trap, pull out the moss, pop the legs off, because you get kind of a consistent, kind of uniform to some degree, amount of tissue and amount of DNA in the extraction. And then it's a 1 in 10, so 1 Armidra to 9 Zaya, 1 in 100, 1 in 200, 1 Armidra to 199 Zaya. And so samples and genes. So we used 4 genes, the ITS1, ITS2, and both of these regions are used for a officially USDA-approved or validated a DNA detection test for Armidra. We also use CO1, this mitochondrial female sex-linked, and then this tyrosophosphate isomerase, this TPI, which is male sex-linked marker. And both of these last two, the primer sets and kind of the protocol, was developed by Negoshi et al. 2016. So here are the results for the MiSeq. So all of these are going to be on a log scale, and just so you can see the Armidra reads, because they pale in comparison to the Zaya reads. I didn't put the numbers on top of the Zaya orange bars, because the Zaya reads are all about 300,000. It was fairly consistent. So you're looking at 300,000 Zaya reads, and then for Zaya only, and this is 3 replicates of the Zaya only pooled DNA, and we get about a 200, so the blue bar, we get about a 200 false positive. So 200 reads that matched Armidra. So that's kind of our false positive limit, that average. And then when you do your 1 in 10 serial dilution, you're getting 40,000 Armidra reads. So you can easily detect all 4 of those, and all 4 of those genes are combined here. I didn't show them separately, but you can easily detect all 4 of those genes in that 1 in 10 serial dilution. The same thing with 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, and 1 in 10,000. So these are all significant, highly significant, using a Mann-Whitney test against the control. The p-value is greater than 0.01. However, I think the 1 in 10,000, that's 622 reads that are significant, is mostly driven by one of the ITS. I think the limit is probably somewhere around 1 in 1,000, which is still a pretty high upper limit. So for real world, we're actually taking legs from traps. So using the MiSeq and doing the 1 in 10, so 1 Armidra leg and 9 Zaya, you're getting 13,000 reads. 1 in 100, you're getting 24,000 reads. And so 24,000 reads, I think, was like around 6% Armidra across all those 4 genes. And then 1 in 200, you're getting around 4,000. So we're going to be ramping this up and seeing where the threshold is for using actual tissue. But I think it's pretty promising that you can sequence and identify all these genes to Armidra in these bulk DNA extractions. For the MinION, this is a lot trickier. It's a newer technology. It doesn't work as well with kind of shorter reads. It's optimized for long reads. But for this, we used all the same genes, with the difference being we didn't have to, we weren't limited to kind of that small fragment that you need for Illumina sequencing. We did a 1,500 base pair fragment, and so we combined ITS1, ITS2 using the forward ITS1 and reverse ITS2. We did a big chunk of CO1 and a bigger chunk of TPI. And the idea here is that that high error rate, which is kind of random, would be distributed better across that 1,500 base pair, and it wouldn't be all condensed, or it wouldn't appear as much in that the diagnostic region of the gene. And so this is a little example of how it runs. So you can do this all in the lab, like I mentioned, and then you can hook this up to your laptop, start it up, and start running it. And so this is what it looks like as it's running, as you're watching. You can stop it during this, you can restart it, you can put it in the fridge, take it out 2 weeks later, add new samples. It can supposedly run for about 48 hours straight, but I find that the pores kind of die after like 32 hours. But anyways, when you see the dark green, that means a pore is open, a little bacterial pore, and when it's light green, that means a DNA strand is moving through the pore. And so how this works is you have like a polymer membrane, and on the polymer membrane, there's these little bacterial pores that are embedded. DNA strand migrates through the bacterial pore at a rate of 450 nucleotides a second, and as it's moving through this pore, it causes electrical impedance, and then that is translated into what they call a squiggle. And the squiggle, which is a terrible name, most of the stuff is poorly named, especially the bioinformatic programs. There's one called RACCON, and every time I looked it up, I'd get like a raccoon. So the squiggle looks like this, and you get the peaks and valleys, and the peaks and valleys then get translated into ATCG, so using the software. And so then you get your FASTQ or your FAST5 out of that. And so I did the bioinformatics different for this. I had to do pattern matching, which I won't get into, but I wasn't aligning it to like a database. This is doing strict pattern matching of SNPs in the flanking regions, or the diagnostic little fragments of DNA. And so, again, this is on a log scale, so you can see the, so the imager reads are more, they're easier to see at least. And so for Zaya only, for the two replicates I did of the control, I got about 300 false positive imager reads in about 200,000 Zaya hits. For the second one, I got fewer. I got 53 imager hits in about 100,000 Zaya hits. And so for the actual tissue, for the leg 1 in 10, 1 in 50, 1 in 100, I got 3,600 hits for imager in 100,000 Zaya reads. And for the 1 in 50, I actually got over 10,000 hits for imager. So it was like over 10%. So I had a little bit more time on before the pores were completely dead on the flow cell, so I did a multiplex. So all that stuff I showed you previously was single amplicons, so individual amplicons for each primer set, and then pooling them, and then running them. This was adding, it was skipping a couple steps and just adding all the primers to one PCR reaction. So all three primer sets and doing a multiplex. And here, just using this, the leg 1 in 10, I got over 10% imager reads. So that were reads that mapped to imager. And so we are going to be replicating this with a MiSeq. We're going to be doing additional replicates using squish buffer, and then going up from like 1 in 25, 1 in 50, 1 in 100, and we find they have enough legs to do the 1 in 1,000 due to a Zaya heavy, I think, field season over the summer. And then we're going to add some additional markers, working on more informative SNPs. And then for the MinION, we're going to be doing more replicates with additional like multiplexing, and we're going to streamline the bioinformatics pipeline. So then I'd like to thank all the people that collected samples over the summer, and all the people that helped me with the project. So, thank you.